welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, book nerd and librarian, Laura Zara-Papinski. My guest today is Kim Johnson, author of the phenomenal and timely new young adult novel, This Is My America. Nick Stone calls the book an incredible and searing examination of the often tragic collision of racism and a flawed criminal justice system. And in a starred review from Kirkus, says harrowing and worthwhile, a call to action from the anti-racist insights of a generation of Black activists. Kim Johnson held leadership positions in social justice organizations as a teen and in college. She's now a college administrator who maintains civic engagement throughout the community while also mentoring Black student activists and leaders. She's also the graduate advisor and member of an historically Black sorority. This Is My America is her debut novel and explores racial injustice against innocent Black men who are criminally sentenced and the families left behind to pick up the pieces. She holds degrees from the University of Oregon and the University of Maryland, College Park. Kim Johnson, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm really excited I get to chat with you today about this phenomenal book.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And I love this podcast. I was listening to different pieces and just excited to be here. So
wonderful. Well, This Is My America is such a powerful book and an important read for our time. I've been thinking so much as I was reading it. I worked as an elementary school librarian for a while, and I just kept thinking how, you know, more at the middle and high school level for this book, but just how this book will lend itself to so many important conversations in classrooms. I was imagining what a great book it would be for like a parent-child book club at like the high school level. And I just think, that teachers and librarians are going to be looking for ways to really connect with their students and have important conversations about the Black Lives Matter movement and issues of systemic racism. And it's just such a powerful read. And I am really looking forward to getting into kids and teachers' hands. So I would love to hear from you just a little bit about the book and our main character, Tracy. And
I started thinking about this book right around 2014 and began sort of writing my outline and ideas for it in 2015, right around the time of the first sort of first wave of the Black Lives Matter movement started to begin, when Eric Garner was choked by police and was murdered on the street. Mike Brown, after his murder, and the Ferguson protests that occurred during that time, where the Black Lives Matter movement really started to begin. And during that time period, the only book that was really out there that was more current and contemporary was Kecklin Lagoon's How It Went Down. And I started to think about my writing more and more, and how I could use my voice and the things that I was passionate about and was, you know, well read on, around issues that impact the Black community, and started to think about wanting to tell a story that was dealing with these issues. I work at a university. I've been an educator for a long time. I use the term educator because I think that I help amplify and support students' learning, although I'm not a teacher or an instructor at an institution, but I work in the field of advising for students. And because of my activism as a young person and through college and my work in the community, students on my campus often come to me as an advisor or a mentor around their leadership and engagement. And they were very activated around issues about Black Lives Matter and were setting demands at their institution, which is sort of following suit around universities and high schools around the country. And a lot of the conversation, though, that I found was really leaning on just specifically police brutality, because you could see it, name it, claim it as something that was wrong. And I started to sort of think more about what my story would be. But I also didn't feel like there was a space for it. I didn't feel like what I wanted to write, that there would be an audience for it. And then when Angie Thomas's made an announcement that once she got an agent based on the book, and I wasn't quite sure what the book was about until she had her deal that came out. And then Jason Reynolds' All American Boys was announced. At first I was like, oh, they've got it. Like, you know, I can't write about this. You know, it's already been written. You know, let me just sort of focus on my other YA books. And sort of didn't sit for a while. But, you know, I found like my interactions with students, they really didn't seem to understand our entire criminal justice system. And their conversation, again, just continued to lean on the actions of police brutality. And my understanding and research and books that I've read, you know, over many years around it is just our entire system. And so I started to see that there was more of an interest in diverse books and started writing my story after I read Bryan Stevenson's Just Mercy. Because I saw that the work that he did, not only in his professional life, but just the way that he told his true story of the work that he's doing and you know, making it more real, I think, for people to understand the humanity of folks that are not only wrongfully incarcerated, but just the use of the death penalty, that I could use, my writing and my understanding and my work of young adult literature to help try to break down some of those themes in a way that young people could start to understand it much earlier. And so that you actually could have conversations, not only just about police brutality, but just then what happens when someone is arrested, you know, what happens when someone is suspected of doing something. You know, Bryan Stevenson, he talks about this, and I've always sort of stuck with his words of that, you know, in the United States, if you have capital, then you can avoid the punishment. And if you don't have capital, then you get capital punishment. And so I wanted to write a story that could talk about the generational impact that has hit Black communities because of racism, because of being accused, because of unfair, you know, from policing to investigation to the process of actually going to trial and even the sentencing, what it would look like for a family that was experiencing it. And that's where Tracy came to me. It was really clear to me that I wanted to have a young girl be the voice of the story. I wanted her not only to, you know, narrate her experience and her life and what that family dynamic would look like, but also for her to not just sort of like sit with how difficult a life that is, but have her be activated, have her be engaged, have her basically have the energy that I had as a young person, and all of the student leaders that I work with and active young activists that I work with and know that don't just sit and you know, wait for something to happen. They actually claim it, fight for it, speak out on it, teach on it, demonstrate on it, protest on it. And I just didn't feel like there was a lot of protagonists in books that would speak to young people who maybe want to do something about it. And in the story, without, you know, going into detail, you know, she does things like I think in young adult books that are thrillers and mysteries that we probably wouldn't recommend young people do. And so I think, you know, I think that that's something just to like, sort of like, you know, I still wanted to be able to honor all of the things that I was trying to do. But, you know, typically the books that I actually write are mysteries and thrillers. And, you know, I love the use of the imagination and having someone sort of jump into the world and maybe do things that I would like never do in real life or never allow my children. So I have kids too, to do. And so that's sort of like the you know, the encompassing thoughts around how I started writing this story, why I started writing this story, and really why I chose Tracy as the main protagonist.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, well, in terms of Tracy, I kept thinking the whole time, she's almost on like a heroine's quest. Like I just really liked how just everything you were saying, how she is such a like active character. And as she's doing, you know, her Know Your Rights workshops and just really not, you know, not letting the cases of her brother and her father rest. Like she's doing the detective work. She isn't, you know, just sitting back and I don't know. I found her character to be just such a strong heroine. And I think the other thing that struck me as you were talking, I've been thinking a lot about this. One of the reasons why I think fiction is so powerful for this is that whole idea of, you know, we're not reading statistics about, you know, racism in the criminal justice system. We're not just seeing numbers. I mean, I was struck right away you know, you're talking about the humanity of all of this. I was thinking about that first visit we see where the family goes to visit her father who's incarcerated, and just watching the daughter, Corinne, who I think is maybe seven, mm-hmm. jumping up and wanting to give him a hug and it being against the rules, just, you know, heartbreaking, and thinking about families just divided and separated, and it's heartbreaking. And I think fiction really putting ourselves in Tracy's shoes and watching her family's experience from so close, I just think really brings to light so many of these issues. And I was also thinking it pairs really well. I've been reading Stamped, but the Jason Reynolds like young adult mm-hmm. remix. And I'm thinking, oh, I feel like this book is also going to just pair really well with nonfiction too for young adults, that, you know, as they're reading, as they're curious about these issues, and my librarian wheels are spinning of like all the different uses for this book. I'm like, it would go so well with this and that. You know, what has it been like to be having the book come out this summer, of all times? And, you know, in a way, I'm sure, you know, there's more of a readership than ever, but for, you know, tragic reasons. So I'm just.
Yeah. And I think I'll touch on earlier what you're saying just about Stamped and sort of like the pairing of nonfiction works with this. And then I'll sort of go with how I'm feeling about, you know, being in this world right now that is very, you know, laser focused in a way that they, you know, haven't been since, you know, probably the civil rights movement, or right on the cusp of, you know, Emmett Till's murder in 1955. And, you know, I'm very well read, having been an ethnic studies major that focused on African-American history, politics, literature, sociological perspectives. And, you know, in my family, my husband, he's very well read on these issues. He's written papers, you know, when he was an undergrad on our criminal justice system, especially for him being a Black man being raised in Oakland, California. And so, you know, I sort of have this sort of interesting perspective of my, you know, life, where I'm an administrator. I read just a ton of nonfiction on these themes and this work. And I love young adult. Like, I love the escape. I love the coming of age. I think it's probably why I work at a university. And so when I was writing this book, I had this huge stack of nonfiction books that were like my foundation in thinking about how to write this book. And, you know, when I sort of fast forward now to where I'm at, you know, I had a sort of sense of urgency, almost like a, you know, use these tricky words, but divine inspiration to start prioritizing this book over another book that I actually was querying, and had, you know, an agent who's my agent now, who was very interested in wanting to do a revision on another book that I was working on that doesn't have to deal with any of these issues. But I actually prioritized this book over that one because I felt like I needed to do it. And I, you know, it was almost like you couldn't like to explain to other people about, wait, you have an agent interested in doing revisions. Why are you saying no? And why are you writing this book that you're like not even done with yet? And now I know why, because if you look, I mean, in my, you know, reference list in the back of the book, I only put, you know, what I thought was like a reasonable number of books to list. My list book was probably like three times that of what I used in terms of like the foundation and thinking about this book. But if you look at those books, those are all the books that people are now buying.
Yes.
That are sold out. You know, if you look at Stamped, if you look at Kimberly Crenshaw's work that she's doing, if you look at The New Jim Crow, The Other Wes Moore, you know, all The Ghost of an Innocent Man, all of these books now are sold out. And those are the books that I used. And so for me, you know, I live a very purpose-driven life. And I feel like I was supposed to write this book. I felt like I was supposed to write this book. And so when I'm in probably my hardest moment, being a debut, seeing everything that's happening in the world and feeling saddened, a lot about, you know, people are now paying attention to it, but what did it take?
Right.
And this isn't new. And so, but I really also try to remember how I was feeling when I was writing this book, that there was something else pushing and driving me to write it. And, you know, before when I went 2 years ago, was going on submission for this book, I didn't think I actually would have a wide readership, because I felt like the book was the honest truth book that I wanted to write, that I felt I needed to write. And I included things in my book that I thought were very important for people to understand. I added a lot of complex themes, more themes than are typical for a YA to really tackle, but it was really important for me to try to be one, ambitious, but to really, really represent what I thought was lacking in context. You know, in a lot of the, just even in classrooms when people are talking about these issues or the lack of discussions that are there. And now, you know, I'm hoping that all the people who bought those books are reading it now, so that when my book comes out, that they actually have this foundation, that they, you know, might look at some things that I point out in the book with a less critical eye. Because, you know, I have representation of the KKK in my book, and white supremacy, and, you know, the mobilization that's sort of the undercurrent of a small town community, you know, things that I think that if all of, you know, all wasn't happening in the world right now, I probably would get a lot more critiques about, is it realistic? You know, is it, you know, are these things really happening? I mean, come on now, that was like so long ago, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, now I feel actually that people are ready to read my work, and my work, you know, potentially could be a really important text that people use in classrooms to help balance out explaining, you know, and I also hope that it actually replaces some very dated texts that actually don't speak on the Black experience and sort of like do it in a peripheral type of way, you know, and can combine that with the real life. And so that's sort of how I've been feeling, although it's a constant reminder that I have to keep telling myself, because it just feels like a terrible time right now with everything going on. But I also know my work is important, and it's important that people read about all kinds of experiences that happen with the Black community, and this, and fantasy and magic, and,
yep,
you know, all kinds of stories that have Black main characters living in a world that, you know, they actually are using their lens versus, you know, an other lens that typically isn't shown.
I think that's so true. And I think it's fascinating that you were feeling such a pull to be writing it and to be prioritizing it. And it does feel like, I don't know, I feel like it is going to be a book when it comes out that like every classroom needs, every library needs. And I think it's going to lead to so many important conversations. And I'm glad you brought up the your reference list at the back. I remember pulling this up as I was reading and thinking the same thing, like, oh, wow, these are, you know, so many of the books that I'm seeing now. And I feel like this, you know, depending on what happens with schools, I feel like, you know, a student could just look at your references and sort of craft their own, like, independent study. There's so much here. And for adults, too, honestly, because, you know, at least for me, so much of this is not anything that was covered in school. But I think it's interesting to be thinking about, you know, I was thinking of it as, oh, reading this first and then going to the nonfiction. But I think you're totally right. I think the nonfiction will really, you know, vice versa, inform the reading experience. And as you bring up, you know, it's hard to take in when you're talking about the, some of the instances of, I don't want to give anything away, but with the KKK and white supremacy, there is a scene with a burning cross, and I had to stop and say to myself, oh, man, like, is this really still happening? And I trusted you as the author, and I Googled, like, how many cross burnings were there in 2019? And I don't remember the number now, but there were a lot, and that was kind of shocking. And, you know, I think this really does bring just an immediacy, I think, to a lot of these issues. And at least for me, there could tell how much, you know, I knew your background going into reading it. So I just kept thinking, like, oh, man, you know, there's so many aspects of this that I, you know, had not really considered or didn't realize were quite as prevalent as they still are. And I think a lot of young people will have that experience, too. Well, you touched on, you know, getting your agent and or having an agent interested. And I had read in an interview from you that you hadn't always considered yourself a writer, and but, you know, decided wanting to like trust yourself and really go for it. Could you talk a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started as an author?
Yeah. So, you know, I've always been a reader. You know, my mom would take me and my sisters to the library, and I would come home with just stacks of books, and just read, read, read. And that was mostly like pre-high school, when I was doing that. And, you know, as I, you know, got older and was in high school, I started to just want stories that I could actually connect more with. I feel like I was always trying to find my way into a story, but it was never really a main character that was Black. And so I was sort of wanting these other experiences that other people were having that I just didn't feel like I was getting. And so I stopped reading for, you know, until I hit college. And most of that was around just textbooks that were, you know, required reading. And, you know, I grew up in a town that's predominantly white that at the time had 1% Black population. There, I've now returned to my, you know, hometown, and now that there's like 2.5%, we've slightly increased. So I often found myself in the classroom that I was like the only one, not only just only Black person, but just only often person of color in my classroom. And so, you know, I didn't ever feel that I actually was supported or encouraged to, you know, work on my writing or consider myself a writer. I felt like my grammar wasn't strong, and it was something that I just couldn't, you know, pick up. And so it was just something I told myself I wasn't good at. I was good at other things, you know. Sorry, my thing went off. Okay. I was good at other things. But it just was the writing piece. And I've always been imaginative. I've always been a storyteller. Like, I used to tell ghost stories to my sister, that I would just like make up out of the blue and just tell her, you know, friends and stuff. And, you know, when I would watch a TV show or a movie, I would just break down the story. And like, I ruin plots all the time for my husband, because I'm like, oh yeah, they totally did it. Or like, I'll actually like, literally I will say the line that someone says before they even say it, because it's just my writer head. Like, I'm writing dialogue in my head. And so I've always kind of been that way. And so, you know, when I was 32, I'm 41 right now. When I was 32, you know, I had my son. He was a couple years old. I was working full time, you know, new, you know, wife only, you know, a couple years. And I felt like I was busy with taking care of everyone else but myself. And so I had a dream, and I've had many vivid dreams, and I just decided to start writing it down. It was almost like an escape. Like, I'm going to go start writing now. And my husband's like, what have you been a writer? You know? and it was like my chance to like step away and get coffee at a coffee shop and have quiet time that was just for myself. And I found it just such a magical time to write. And then I just started seriously writing. And, you know, I learned how to write basically by doing and learning from Twitter, to be honest, like pitch contests, reading people's blogs, you know, and as podcasts became more popular, listening to podcasts from writers, and just by doing. And so, you know, I finished my first manuscript, I think about a year later after I started writing, querying, learning how to query, learning how to start, you know, a chapter. Spent way too long querying a book that I should have let go and started writing the second book. But I also was a little scared, like, I wrote one book, could I actually write a second book? And when I started writing the second book, I just realized that I just loved it. Like, it was smoother, it was easier, because I'd learned so much about like basic things, like how to write dialogue and like how to appropriately, like, you know, put quotation marks, comma, quotation mark, I said, you know, like things like that, that I just didn't even know how to do. Like, I just knew how to do it now with my second novel. And, you know, I spent time on it. It was easier. I knew how to query. My query was getting stronger. But I still was sort of like, you know, I was writing a psychological thriller at the time with diverse characters. And it was difficult because it was dual point OV, and I just wasn't quite sort of getting it. So I went through several like revisions with agents, and in the meantime, I had started writing, you know, This Is My America, slowly, but I really wasn't ready to jump in until all of a sudden I just felt like I wanted to do that and was still querying the other book. And my agent now, you know, we were talking on the phone and she was sharing how she liked my second book and that she wanted to go on revisions. And I just told her, thank you, but no, thank you. because, and it was like, I will definitely love to jump into it, but I really want to finish this other manuscript because I feel like it's the book that I'm supposed to be writing right now. And I don't want to sort of step away from it to go back into revisions when I've sort of already been doing that with this other project. And so we talked and we just gelled really well. And I talked about my writing journey. And then I started talking about the book that was still in really rough form. I think it was like half really written and polished, and the other half I was still was like, you know, working on. And I, you know, shared it with her because she's like, give it to me, send it to me. You know, I like you. I like your second book. Like, let me see what you write. And then she offered like 2 weeks later. And, you know, I had other offers after that, but I really just connected with, my agent because I felt like she saw the breadth of my writing and valued it. And, you know, we spent basically about a year going through writing and me finishing the book and then going through revisions with her. And there's other things that I had this sort of like sense of urgency of like, we got to go on submission now. And she's like, no, another round of revisions. And I'm like, no, we need to do it now. And she was like, okay, let's do just a test batch. Will you be okay with a test batch? I'm like, yes. And so, you know, we sent it out to 5 editors, and like within 3 weeks, I'd already had a R&R that turned into going into acquisitions and then another acquisitions, and it ended up being a preempt. And so, you know, I've sort of been off and running since then. So
that's really fascinating to hear. And I think, you know, for all of us, but for young people in particular, I think it's so valuable to hear, you know, sort of the backstories behind a book, and, you know, to hear that, you know, there's a novel, like, I feel like I've talked to so many authors who have like a novel in a drawer that was like their novel that taught them how to write. And I think that's interesting that was kind of for you too. And just that it's, sort of a winding path sometimes. And, I don't know. I just think that I think pulling the veil sort of down can be really helpful. And, you know, especially for maybe young people who don't see themselves as writers or maybe also didn't feel encouraged, that they can do it too if they have that passion. And I so relate to the just bliss of getting to go, well, can't do it right now, but getting to go like sit in a coffee shop by yourself and write when you have little kids. It's like,
I mourn that so much. Gosh,
I would kill for that. Just be like, a nice hot coffee alone with my computer.
Like, God, it's like the best thing ever, and I can't get away now.
I know. But yeah, I'm always, that's the other thing I find really inspiring. Just I feel like I've heard from so many women who have, you know, I think sometimes we think, well, I can't do it if I don't have, you know, X many hours in the day or whatever, but I just feel like I've heard so many inspiring stories from women and moms with jobs and, you know, a lot going on who make it work. And I just find that really inspiring too. You mentioned, you know, you sort of fell away from reading a little bit, which breaks my librarian heart. And I, this is why I feel like I'm just, you know, so passionate about the diverse books movement and all of that. But I'm curious to hear sort of later on when you came back to reading, and I guess just also what you've been reading lately, because it's sort of an interesting time to be a reader. And
So when I was in college, you know, I was going towards the major that my mom told me. She was like, you need to do computer science or business. And this is sort of being a first generation student, and, you know, she wanted me to do well. And like, well, financially, it didn't matter what my passion was about. And I took an ethnic studies 101 course, and I didn't stop from there. I loved it so much. I loved taking courses in African American lit and being exposed to Charles Chestnut and Zora Neale Hurston and County Cullen and just so many authors, taking an African American history class where I was really into narrative. So the narrative of Sojourner Truth, the narrative of Frederick Douglass, just really reading these amazing works written by Black authors in like the 1800s and 1900s. Like, it just was so amazing to me, and I wish that I would have just had that earlier, at least in high school, because I think that there's some just fascinating works that people have done. And you know, then I just sort of like jumped into the nonfiction world and really more historical texts that people would recommend, but wouldn't necessarily be recommending as, you know, an adult to like sort of like pick up and like, oh, go pick up the Narrative of Sojourner Truth. That's like not something that like I've ever had anyone tell me at a bookstore to take. And so, you know, it's really interesting how like technology and the access, I'm really big on access. The work that I do with young people is about, at my university, is about how can we create access so that more people are able to attain and be successful with their education. And so, you know, I started writing because my husband got me an iPad and I was able to pick it up really easily with having a toddler. And I could like multitask and do that. And so then all of a sudden it became like there was a less of a barrier. Now I can never write on an iPad. That's like crazy to me. I couldn't even do it. I started reading because my husband got me a Kindle because he was busy reading. I never felt like I had time to read. I, you know, and there was just a bunch of, you know, free or very low cost, self-published books. And I was just picking up things all the time. Like, you know, Hunger Games was like $2.99 e-Kindle deal. I bought it and I was like, oh, I like YA. Oh, this is like, I love it. And so that actually started my journey where I was just basically reading whatever I could get my hands on in my Kindle, and I could multitask. I could cook while I was reading. I could have the baby in my lap while I was reading. Like, I could do so many things in a way that I couldn't do with at least what I thought was a physical book at the time. And it also was at the time period where the We Need Diverse Books movement was getting really, it was just sort of grounding and just had been founded and, you know, was getting popular, because what I had found when I was reading was that I liked the entertainment and the feeling of reading in a book, but again, I still wasn't present in the book. I wasn't visible. I wasn't represented. And with the We Need Diverse Books movement, I started seeing myself as writing the stories that I was searching desperately for. And then more authors were starting to get deals. And so then I was just able to fill my catalog of books. And because reading became, you know, something that was back in my life, I didn't necessarily need a Kindle to be able to read, or an e-reader. I wanted to go to the bookstore. I wanted to like pick up books. I wanted to, you know, see the cover. And as I was writing, I wanted to be able to see like who's in their acknowledgments and what does it physically feel like to touch a book, smell a book, read a book. I write in a bookstore or in a coffee shop. Like, that's like the space that I love the most, you know, to write. And so, you know, that's how I fell in love with young adults so much, because I felt like I was sort of re-experiencing that time period that I didn't get a chance to do when I was a young person. And, you know, as I've started to learn more and more about books, you know, I realized that they actually were books by Black authors that I just didn't know about. Like, in my library, they weren't telling me about. And so, you know, it's almost like they're, you know, they were there, but like, I just couldn't find them. Mm-hmm. And part of me was like, did I know to look? I didn't know to look. I just assumed that they weren't there. And so now that it's more prominent, I've really been trying to balance reading works that I should have been reading a long time ago if I would have known about them. And what I'm reading now, I've been reading a lot. I've really wanted to support a lot of debuts, you know, that are out there. So I sort of balance between reading debuts, and I like to read context and text that can help me think about my next book that I'm writing. And so my span is really broad. I continue to read nonfiction. I always read a ton of nonfiction. I recently read You Should See Me in a Crown by Leah Johnson, which I just absolutely loved. Agnes at the End of the World by Kelly McWilliams. Some of the earlier debuts that I read was Liz Lawson's The Lucky Ones. I think that's what it's called. I'm sorry, my brain is
That's okay. I'll
unable
find it
to
and
keep
link
it
to
up.
it.
Yeah, Liz Lawson. I thought that was a beautiful book. And I'm right now I'm reading The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, and I love that this book is out there and it's touching on themes that I really haven't seen, because actually my next book that I'm writing in historical fiction has some of the themes that are in her book, in terms of like passing in, basically trying to survive in a harsh world that doesn't really accept Black people, or the success rate of having opportunities just aren't there. And so, you know, I'm writing on that topic. And so I think her book is so timely for me personally, because
Yeah.
there aren't a lot of books that are current that were dealing with that issue. And I thought that it might be sort of a hard read for someone to pick up, but I love that's coming out there. And so I'm reading a lot of historical fiction just because I'm writing historical fiction. So The Girl in the Blue Coat, is that Monica Hess? I think that's Monica Hess. I've been reading that. I've just been it's all over the place.
I love that, though. I think that's always so interesting to see like people's different categories. And I know The Vanishing Half, I keep hearing such great things. I've got to get a hold of that one. And your next book, I'm glad you touched on it. I did want to ask what was coming next. So you said it's historical fiction. What time period is it set in?
Yeah, so it's set in 1955, which is a really important time period in history. It's the year that Emmett Till was murdered, and it's basically the early cusp of the civil rights movement starting to sort of be the groundwork building. So if you look at the current time period, you know, George Floyd to me is sort of the embodiment of Emmett Till, and I'm sort of looking hopeful at what the next 10 years will look like, as we'll be on another, you know, round of true civil rights work and justice work for supporting the Black community. I can't go too much into detail about that book. I probably always say too much anyways, but the themes that I cover issues of passing and white passing. So basically someone who is African American but passes and their life is white. It touches on themes of redlining and the Great Migration. So, Blacks moving north. And the last theme it really touches on are the sort of like the understanding of the American dream, sort of like the, you know, white picket fence, 2.5 children and a dog. And so it touches on all those different themes about, you know, suburbia and, you know, access to, you know, a better life and what that means for African American people. So,
sounds fantastic. Is there a publication date for that yet, or is it too early?
It's too early. I think with COVID, things have sort of, you know, slowed.
Yeah.
Personally, in
yes,
writing,
I'm I mean, sure.
capacity to write, and so that's not set yet. So,
yeah.
But I am looking forward to, you know, to having a date that's set. And because I'm really excited about this book and the thoughts I have for a book to follow up that. Again, I like themes. I like to unpack issues so that people can understand them. I like to highlight lived experiences of people. And so for this next book, my hope is that I have a follow-up book that will be actually contemporary and will be a nice companion to sort of look at these themes in different ways that we often don't get a chance to explore.
Sounds wonderful. Well, I hope that people pick up This Is My America or get it from their library. It's just such an important read for everyone. And also the mystery aspects of it. I think it's a book that's very hard to put down, that young people and adults alike are really going to have a good reading experience. And I'll look forward to future books. And I just have to say too, I'm going to be keeping my eyes peeled and my ears open during award season, because I just thought the book was phenomenal. And I feel like it's going to be one of those books that the cover is just like covered in medals. That's my prediction. So
oh, that would be amazing. I hope you do.
That's my prediction. So
thank you.
Well, congratulations and best of luck with your virtual book tour. Oh, actually, I did want to ask that. Are there any, I can maybe they're on your website, but I could direct people toward any like other virtual events or anything else you have going on for your book tour.
They'll be on my website. We're still sort of building it out. I need to do a refresh. And so I think if you look at my website or follow me on Instagram at Casey Johnson Wright, I'll be trying to keep up there. So.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast, and congratulations again on the book.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy readings.